Good afternoon. We are back with the Sean Mo Hoops podcast, the first pod of the new year. Hope everybody had a good Christmas and holiday season. A lot of good hoops going on from the high school level to the college level, which brings me to my featured guest, Mikey V, who was on a few weeks ago to chat high school and college hoops. And Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Sean, and happy new year. Thanks for having me on.
Perfect. Well, I want to kind of kick it in with some high school action. I know we both got to attend some of the better events over the holidays, and I guess I'll start with you. You live in Portland, and each year there's a big tournament, the Les Schwab tournament, and I know you've been going there the past few years. I don't think the talent level was as high as it was last year or in years past, but who's been in the Les Schwab tournament the past few years that you've seen, and how was it this year for you?
Yeah, the Les Schwab has been going on. This was the 22nd year, and I have gone to the last three since I moved back to Portland. The first year we had Markel Fultz and a bunch of great guards on Oak Hill that were the standouts, and also a couple solid guards on Garfield and Jalen Noel and Dejon Davis. The Oak Hill
Seattle
guards were,
or sorry, not Seattle, but Washington and Stanford.
Yeah. And usually the way the tournament is formatted, it's usually a couple teams from Washington, a couple teams from out of state, and the rest of the teams are from Oregon. This year, it was two teams from California, and Oak Hill was back again. And last year, I think, was one of the better Les Schwabs ever, in that they had the marquee matchup of the number one player at the time in 2017 in Michael Porter, and the number one player at the time in 2018 in Marvin Bagley. And they matched up in the final, and it was epic. It was a great matchup. Marvin totally got the better of him in the first half, outscored him 21-10. And then at the end, Michael Porter, I think, finished with 27. Marvin finished with, I believe, 25. And Nathan Hale won by 2 points. So, yeah, that was a really exciting game last year. Not to mention the talent on both their teams. They had Remy Martin running point for Sierra Canyon, and Cody Riley was a force down low, but Jonte Porter and PJ Fuller were very big for Nathan Hale as well. And this year the marquee teams were Oak Hill and Mater Dei. Oak Hill, just, you know, the usual, they have a bunch of guys going high major, and Mater Dei, I think people in California know that they're always going to have a really solid team with some very fundamentally sound players. And yeah, they met in the finals, but it was a bit of a downer because Bull Bull was supposed to be the big marquee guy for Mater Dei, and he had transferred to
Philly
Prep. So, yeah, but in the end, it did actually play out that way. And there was also Crespi from California, and they had a point guard who missed the entire summer but played very well in this tournament and looks like he will be kind of a step up at the point guard position for Arizona once he gets there next year, in Brandon Williams.
Yep, I know he's ranked very, very highly, so looking forward to seeing him play over the next few weeks in California. But who stood out for Oak Hill to you?
I would say Johnson and Johnson were the two marquee guys for Oak Hill. Keldon Johnson is widely considered to be a top 10, 15 or so player in the class of 2018, and was one of the better players in the EYBL for Boo Williams, and moved from Huntington Prep to Oak Hill. And he, from what I heard, he had a terrible flight to Portland, 35 hours in the airport. So went from being picked up at the airport at 4 o'clock to his game at 7 o'clock and did not miss a beat. And that was pretty much him for the rest of the tournament as well. Like, you know, they'd usually start off giving it to a few other guys, and then every game Oak Hill kind of struggled in the first quarter. They were even down against Mater Dei. Even in the first game against Barlow, who was a team that I think got pretty much trampled by most of the other teams they played in the tournament from Oregon after their first round of game against Oak Hill. Oak Hill was only up 24-23, and they had allowed 7 threes in the first quarter. They ended up winning the game by 40. They doubled their score. Yeah, I think it was like 102-51. But Kelvin Johnson led the charge. Really good shooter. Just scores from pretty much all three levels. And the thing that really was impressive with him as well, not just like, you know, finishing above the rim and everything. He's not overly explosive, but he is a good athlete. He's really, really strong. And he finished through contact a lot. And I said it the whole tournament, I felt like they were refereeing on a curve, because Brandon Williams got to the line pretty much constantly, and yeah, he was getting fouled a lot. But Kelvin Johnson was also getting fouled a lot. And through these, like, heavily contact drives and everything, he was still managing to finish, which was pretty impressive. And then the other guy who's kind of, like, under the radar right now, I feel, at least from having seen him for these four games, is Keontae Johnson, who's going to Florida. And now Kelton, if I didn't mention before, is going to Kentucky. But Keontae Johnson is a strong wing as well. Showed an ability to shoot, and he can really leap. And I didn't see much from the mid-range, but he seemed to pass it pretty well. And he fits the profile of somebody who could be a pretty decent SEC guard in time. So, yeah, those were the two guys that stood out. Then another guy on Oak Hill, there are two other high major guys, and one is David McCormack, and
yep,
just an enormous human being.
And he's what, 6'10", 250?
Yeah, he's 6'10". They list him 250. He still has to be somewhere near, like, 270 or so. But he wasn't – he used to be, like, around 300 pounds, I believe. Like, when I saw him as a sophomore, he was, like, kind of like an off – I think he had played offensive tackle even. They were saying he was, like, a football prospect as well. But, he's really kind of trimmed down into basketball shape. Not great laterally, but still such a presence. Finished above the rim. He's not going to do that often at the college level, I believe. And, you know, shooting still leaves maybe a bit to be desired, but there are definitely things that he can do, and he is a presence in there. And it seems to, you know, have, like, some length as well. He was quite solid for Oak Hill, and never really faced somebody who, like, you know, Michael Wong, who's 6'10" and about 240, more of like a kind of a perimeter oriented center than close to the basket, and not a great athlete himself, was probably the closest to an actual center that McCormack ended up facing. He had a good tournament, and he's going to Kansas. And then there was an Oregon commit in Will Richardson, who ran point. Had a really rough first game and just did not seem to be into it. Again, I heard it was probably because of the crazy flight time and that the players on Oak Hill, for the most part, were really, really tired. Though Keontae and Kelvin Johnson didn't seem to really show much fatigue. But, you could definitely tell that Will Richardson in the first game wasn't himself. But he's like a nice combo guard. Still kind of an inconsistent shooter, but he passes, he rebounds, and he's somebody that I'm really excited to see in Oregon next year and thought was a great pickup. And also, like, on defense, he manages to make some things happen. The first game I saw him in the EYBL, he had like 3 blocks, and he had a few here as well. And Oak Hill, around Dick's Nationals time, they're looking like a school that can definitely compete again. So, yeah, their depth is just absurd. Like, they have guys coming off the bench. They have B.J. Mack, who's going to Virginia Tech. Maurice Kalou, who's a big body. And, they're just a really big and talented team. So, that was the champion, and those guys were the headliner this year. Ticket sales seem to be down a bit, but overall, it was another great Les Schwab Invitational.
Well, I imagine after having the year of Bagley versus Porter, it would be tough to repeat that. But
yeah,
it definitely sounds like Oak Hill, at least, you know, brought one powerhouse team and kind of got to show a lot of their talent, beating Matter Day, who was actually a team I got to see a week earlier in Florida, and they ended up losing in the game I watched to Wesleyan Christian of North Carolina. But it was probably the first 12 minutes was extremely fun to watch. Matter Day has a little lefty point guard headed to Harvard, Spencer Friedman, and he scored 22 points in the first 12 minutes of the game. And he was basically just coming down and shooting 10 feet behind the three-point line with ease. And just, I think he drained 2 threes from that distance, hit another one, had 2 at a lefty drive, a righty drive, some around-the-back passes. So in that first 12 minutes, he hit 6 threes and had the 2 layups. So they got off to a hot start, eventually cooled off, and ended up losing the game. But that first half was definitely something to watch and something enjoyable for Matter Day.
Yeah, Spencer he's a show. He is a lot of fun to watch. I had a friend interview him as well, and great kid too. The first game they played, Spencer had 6 three-pointers and 22 on the game. That was pretty much in hand the whole time. He got sick, unfortunately, on during the day of their second game, so he didn't play. And then in their semifinal game against Jefferson, who is the odds-on favorite to win, they're last year's their state champion in Oregon, and have a couple players who one who's headed to Texas and Kamaka Hepa, and another who has a Pac-12 offer. And then Cam Chapman's brother, Khalil Chapman, had a nice little tournament as well. In that game, they still managed to win, but Spencer definitely did not look like himself. And I felt like near the end of the game, like, he looked like he was going to pass out. Like, his face was like white as a sheet. But he in the game against Oak Hill, he was their spark plug and kind of, you know, kept them in it in the beginning when they were up 18-11 after one, and scored 5 three-pointers there. So yeah, kid can really shoot the ball. And he makes some great plays, too. Like, he makes some really nice passes, good reads, and can run
good fundamental. Good fundamental point guard.
Yeah. Did you find, like, the team was having trouble, like, did he – I guess I should
mean, they were pretty overwhelmed athletically, definitely not. You know, if they had Bol Bol, would have been different. But, you know, definitely lacking that high major D1 talent they usually have. But – there's plenty of other teams in the city of Palms that had that high level D1 talent. So it was a fun day of games starting at 9 a.m. and basically 5 stars playing one after another until the last game, which started at 9 p.m., which featured 2 of the top players kind of in the country going back to back. But overall, it was a pretty
exciting day. And one thing that was interesting in years past, they always had a high school tournament and then kind of a prep school tournament. Here, like Mohamed Bamba, Diallo, Brandon Randolph, DeAndre Ayton. So basically the guys that you'll be seeing picked in the top 10 picks of the draft this coming summer. But this year they did away with that, and they actually had a small town shootout, which featured four schools, and they were in towns that were under 15,000. So initially I wasn't too excited to watch these games, and I think neither were some of the other fans there, as they used kind of some of these games to go out to their lunch break. But one of the games I watched was actually one of the most entertaining games. It had Jordan McCabe, a little white chocolate, going to West Virginia.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
His team from Wisconsin was playing Mars, Pennsylvania, which had a guy, Robbie Carmody, 6'4", 6'5", wing, coach's son that's going to Notre Dame. And this basically turned into, you know, they weren't going at each other specifically, but McCabe finished with 42 points, and Carmody finished with 39 points. So it was actually,
wow,
I thought, one of the more entertaining games of the day, despite, you know, there's the other players were definitely not as talented as the other teams, but it still provided some definite highlights. So that was pretty fun to watch. I know a lot of coaches made their way through, but the day I was there, the highest profile coach was Tom Crean, who stopped by to catch some of the early games before heading out. And I think he ended up doing the Illinois-Missouri game the day later, but he got to see early in the morning. But you know, overall it was a lot of high level talent. The University School from Florida ended up winning it, and they ended up winning the John Wall Classic a week later. But they have Vernon Carey, who's one of the top big men in the junior class, and he ended up going against James Wiseman, the other top big man, and came out on top. So it was fun to watch him play, as well as kind of getting my first look at Chicago Simeon. Hadn't seen them basically since I'd moved out of Chicago, and Horton Tucker, who I don't know what his wingspan is, but it's basically monstrous. And he was kind of a 6'7". He looked, I mean, it basically looked like he was dribbling a tennis ball with how kind of, you know, big his hands were and a huge upper body. So definitely a unique player that'll be going to Iowa State next year. So enjoyed watching him play, even though he didn't have the best game. And then another game was Hudson Catholic with one of the top point guards, Javon Quinterly. They're going, and along with one of your boys, Louis King, who didn't play that well. But
don't forget that wing over there too, that combo.
Yeah,
forward.
Top 20 guy going to Oregon, but they are going against Oak Ridge in Florida, who has, I'd say, I guess, one of the top power forwards in Emmett Williams, who he was playing in the game despite his legal difficulties, and was an absolute beast on the boards with 24 points and 9 rebounds. And Oak Ridge ended up winning the game, but they're probably one of the tougher teams I saw. I think their point guard was this kid. He was, I don't know, 5'9" at best. But his name was Marcus Taylor. I remember I was like, man, that guy must play football, because he just had muscles popping out of his legs and his arms despite how short he was. And sure enough, the first article I saw, it said Michael Taylor broke the school record scoring 6 touchdowns in 1 half. So wow, they definitely had a lot of crazy athletes on that team. But that just kind of goes to show the quality of that tournament. So it was fun getting to watch a lot of the players that the College Hoops Junkies will be talking about next year.
Yeah, and I just wanted to bring one other guy up. Sean and I were both at USA Minicamp in October, and to me, the guy who was the best 2020 player there was, I believe, named City of Palms MVP for University School, and that was Scotty Barnes. Kind of wanted to know what you thought about Scotty Barnes in that game against Memphis East.
I mean, he's 6'8", I forget his wingspan, but it's basically kind of
somewhere in the 7'1.5" or so range. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, he'll be getting a lot of Scotty Pippen comparisons. He's kind of a point forward with just, you know, I think crazy defensive ability. Offensively, he's still, you know, pretty raw. Not really a good shooter, but, you know, he would just grab the rebound and he could push it up the court and maneuver his way into the lane to finish, you know, time and time again. So, you know, it was similar to what we saw back in October in terms of how he played, but, you know, you look at him and you kind of just see potential oozing out of him. I mean, especially defensively with what you think he could be down the road. Mm-hmm. He ended up scoring 15 points in the championship game with 8 rebounds. But, you know, I think definitely on that team, Vernon Carey is kind of the solid go-to guy. While Barnes is kind of the electric, kind of point forward, do everything, jackknife type of player, but still needs some definite work on his ball handling and shooting, but the size and the length will always be there and is always tantalizing for what he could be down the road.
Yeah, I for one, just looking at the rankings and everything, I was a little surprised that he wasn't considered like the one or two guy in that class, because even, you know, you see him against guys who are, you know, good athletes with very good ball skills, and Jalen Green and RJ Hampton, and then a guy with size and, you know, possibly an ability to put it together as well, and Isaiah Todd. But to me, Scotty Barnes, like, just checks so many boxes right now. And I think his shot, like, at least shows some potential, at least from what I saw. Like, I even at USA minicamp, I saw him make like a few mid-range shots in scrimmages, and I don't know. I really like the guy, and I think he's one of the more intriguing prospects in like the next couple classes. So, yeah, I was wondering how he looked.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he obviously did well enough to help his team win the championship, but the team he played against, Memphis East, so. They're coached by Penny Hardaway. They were probably would put most D1 teams to shame in terms of their size with James Wiseman, and basically went 7 feet, 6'9", and 6'8" along the front line. But mm-hmm. One, their point guard Alex Lomax put basically what did he put up? He put up 20 points, 13 rebounds and 10 assists in the championship game.
Yeah, that's a tough dude.
This guy is going to Wichita State, so he'll definitely be a name that people are talking about as kind of one of probably an underrated top point guard down the road. But you know, a lot of people know the Lawson brothers that were at Memphis and are now sitting out at Kansas, and I knew they had one more brother who's a junior, I believe, Chandler Lawson, but I forgot they had another one coming, Jonathan Lawson, who's a 6'6", lanky freshman wing. So, you know, if things go right with them at Kansas, I would imagine the next two brothers will be ending up there down the road. But, you know, obviously a talented basketball family, but I think the Lawsons and Alex Lomax will definitely be names that we will be hearing a lot more from down the road.
Yeah, and with Chandler Lawson, too, at the past couple Elite 100, so it would be one thing if it was just, like, you know, once off, but at the past two, he measured with a 7'6" wingspan. And when you see him, his length is just absurd. But he, again, not overly explosive, at least when I saw him, and seemed pretty raw in terms of like ball skills and just like you know, jump shooting, stuff like that. So did he show any flashes or anything in the game that you saw, Sean?
I mean, he, you know, good. I thought he had good form on his jump shot and was a little more smooth and under control than the older Lawson brothers were in high school when I got to see them at the Chicago Elite Classic many, many years ago. So, you know, I think he's probably, you know, taken from his brothers and learned. So I would say, you know, obviously don't have his usage rate in front of me or any advanced stats, but I would say he's probably a little more efficient and a little smarter than his older brother. So we'll see how that translates down the road. But, you know, between the Les Schwab and City of Palms, a lot of names for the future, but right now we're kind of hitting the mix of the college basketball season, conference play, as, you know, 2, 3, 4 games in for some teams. And there's been, you know, definitely a lot of good action. I think there's a few conferences, the ACC, the Big 12, and the Big East, where really anything can happen any day. But I was just kind of curious about some of your early thoughts on the college basketball conference season and kind of what you had been paying attention to lately.
Well, I always pay attention to the Dudden draft. it seems like it's a really wide open year for college basketball. And right now, Michigan State kind of looks like they're maybe the team to beat. I don't know, since Duke played so well against them, but just, you know, with Villanova falling to Butler, which was a team that I saw out here that almost lost to Ohio State, but managed to come back and win. It's going to be really interesting to see how road teams look this year, because we saw Texas Tech just beat Kansas at Fog. So, yeah, it's going to be a pretty crazy year of college basketball. And right now, yeah, no real clue as far as some of the favorites in the conferences, like have kind of struggled, like Texas A&M just losing a couple games to start off their conference.
Yeah, that was a big surprise, not only losing their first game, but then getting trounced at home by Florida. And I know last time we chatted, we actually talked a lot about Texas A&M, and I was pretty impressed with how they played at USC. So I was definitely surprised to see them start 0-2, kind of given their size and talent and senior leadership. But that was, to me, that was one of the bigger surprises of how they've started so far in the SEC.
For sure. And the fashion that they lost, and Kansas too. Like, could this be the year Kansas finally doesn't win the Big 12? I think we seriously have to think about it. They could still turn it around, but it's just really, really a lack of depth on Kansas right now. So, which is pretty surprising, because, you know, Sam Cunliffe just was eligible, and that was somebody I know you were always high on. We'll see if they can get Silvio D'Souza and Billy Preston in the mix, but not sure if those guys are going to help them do it. And what looks like a really strong Big 12 conference this year as well.
In the Big 12, there's really no night off at all.
And from top to bottom, they're tough.
I was expecting a little more from Malik Newman. He definitely is not, he only played 21 minutes against Texas Tech, and, you know, I was expecting him and Devontae Graham to kind of basically repeat kind of what Devontae and Frank Mason had been doing, but, you know, they're really just missing kind of that, you know, the superstar kind of really talented player to get them over the hump. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they lost to Arizona State at home and now Texas Tech, so it'll be interesting to see
see what happens to them down the road. But you mentioned Sam Cunliffe, and he scored 7 points in, you know, I think it was 9 or 10 minutes, and that was his first conference game. But you know, they were losing by 10, but he did give them some energy down the road, or you know, at the very end. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting
to
see if he's able to add anything, because you know, also last year at ASU when he was there, you know, he didn't really kind of get into the swing of things. He had some good games early on, but obviously didn't take well to Hurley's coaching style, and now we'll see if he's able to flourish at Kansas. So definitely interested to see how they do in the Big 12. I mean, I think out of all the conferences, you mentioned Michigan State, and the Big 10, definitely not that strong, I would say. So I could easily see them having one of the better conference records of 16-2 or 17-1 or something like that, along with perhaps Arizona, who kind of survived their first tall task at home, beat ASU in a tough game, and now they go on the road to Colorado and Utah. But I think the Pac-12 is a little maybe not as talented as people thought earlier in the year, and Arizona has been getting in the swing of things, so they could be, at least in terms of conference teams, one that has a pretty strong record and isn't getting, you know, beat up game after game like a lot of the other big name schools are.
Yeah, Arizona looks pretty darn good headed into conference play also. And the Pac-12 should at least be interesting, if not as deep as they kind of thought it might be. You know, yeah, USC losing to Washington at home was definitely a shocker. But with Arizona State picking up and giving Arizona really everything that they had as well, you'll still, I think, see at least a few teams in the Pac-12 kind of coming up with something. But you're absolutely right about the Big Ten. It looks like Michigan State's conference to lose, and they should win a lot of games there.
I'm pretty interested
ACC.
To see how the AC, well, I was going to go to the Big East, but we can go to the ACC first.
Okay, yeah. Either way. But, yeah, the ACC, that is going to be a really interesting conference as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think for that, you know, Duke lost on the road to BC and then had a close game at home against Florida State. And, I mean, for them, their defense is pretty suspect, but, I mean, their offense
mm-hmm.
is definitely hard to stop. So it's going to take one of those BC efforts of just hitting 50% of your threes to beat them. But really kind of getting any, you know, you really have to defend your home court and try to sneak a road win or two in the mix. UVA had a big one at Virginia Tech tonight. And then they get UNC at home next week. But I mean, even Notre Dame, who lost Bonzi for quite some time, you know, they're 2-0 right now. And then you have Georgia Tech beating Miami at home. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of, you know, besides Pittsburgh, you have, and I'd say NC State, definitely a lot of quality teams that are in action.
The NC State team that beat Arizona?
Yeah, and then proceeded to lose two games right after that. But,
very true. But, you know, on the road in college basketball, anything can happen. So that's something that I think we've definitely learned over time.
Yeah, and, you know, over the break, I got to watch the Georgetown-Butler game, and that was actually highly entertaining. Georgetown was up 20 or so points in the first half, and little by little, Butler went to his zone and whittled the lead down until they got a tip in at the buzzer to go into overtime, and then ended up winning in double overtime. But that was a pretty entertaining game, and even though they lost, I came away pretty high on Georgetown. I know they've been kind of any college basketball guys enjoyed making fun of their schedule, but you know, to me,
I didn't really have anything wrong with it. I mean, obviously, as a season ticket holder, you probably wanted to see some better games, but they still got Syracuse, and they had a young, you know, a young team, a new coach, and they got a lot of wins under their belt. But they easily could have beat Syracuse, and they could have beat Butler. So, you know, I think they'll be interesting with Jesse Govan and Marcus Derrickson, and Jamorco Pickett was really intriguing to me, just of how he's 6'8", skinny, really long, of kind of how he develops. But you know, today I saw Marcus Howard scored 52 points in a one overtime win against Providence, which is
Yeah, an 11
absolutely
three-pointer.
insane.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That kid can shoot.
He
Man,
can, he can.
his
And
brother
you know,
his brother plays for Central Arkansas, actually, and I think he scored 8 or 9 three-pointers against Oregon when we went up against them just a little while ago. So, yeah, it runs in the family, but man, Marcus Howard can really, really shoot the ball.
yeah, I mean, 11 of 19 from three, shooting over 50%, shot 6 of 10 from two. I mean, he's not shooting as well as he did last year, but he's still at, I mean, he was the top 3-point shooter in the country last year, but he's still over 40%, and he's already taking as many threes as he did last year. So, you know, he's quite the success story, considering he basically graduated high school early. And I remember he made the USA U17 team, helped them win a gold medal, got back and went straight to summer school in Marquette. So, you know, everything he's been doing, he technically could still be a freshman. So to score 52 points is quite remarkable. But you know, that conference is going to be a dogfight as well, because even DePaul is they're 0-3, but they've at least been competitive and have some talented players this year.
And just one note with Marcus Howard as well. His he was at actually 37.7%, but this game puts him at 40.2. 45 of 45 from the free throw line so far.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So yeah. It doesn't seem like it's a fluke.
No, I would agree. So kind of, you know, going, you know, each day there are going to be different upsets and different stat lines, but what's one game you're looking forward to this weekend?
To me, it is seeing the probably the best one-man show in college basketball. Though the rest of his team is not bad either, but he's the show. So Trae Young and Oklahoma are going to be going up against Javon Carter, Daxter Miles, and West Virginia. And this will be an opportunity to see Trae Young go up not only against a good team, but a team that prides itself on defense and has some really strong perimeter defenders. So, yeah, that's definitely going to be a game that I'm looking at this weekend. What about yourself, Sean?
Well, definitely that game. I mean, Trae Young is, you know, been putting up ridiculous numbers, and I remember back in high school, people were talking about him and Michael Porter as a package duo before kind of Porter and
Yeah.
his dad started to do their own thing. But imagine having those two on the same college team. But I mean, Trae Young has been incredible, and is definitely, you know, he was a five-star player in high school. But you know, I remember, this was going back a few years, but interviewing him at one of the EYBLs in Lexington, and I'm 6'2", and had a good few inches on him, but he definitely looks like he's, you know, 6'2", 6'3", right now. And you know, just kind of has the ball on the string anytime he plays. But going into West Virginia and playing, you know, a team that will look to get after him, that will be definitely the most entertaining game, I think, of anyone. For the game I'm looking forward to watching, I'm actually gonna go a little smaller on Sunday, but go back to the Pac-12 of Arizona State and Utah. Arizona State, you know, they suffered their first loss to Arizona in a very hard-fought, close game on the road. So I think at even though they lost, you know, really kind of showed a lot of people that were probably expecting them to get blown out or basically for their run to, you know, to end. But looking forward to seeing them play at Utah. So, you know, they open up with three road games. Utah's 2-0, and they don't really have any names that stand out after Kuzma left, but definitely a well-coached team. But in terms of ASU, just seeing if they can kind of continue their shooting with, you know, a potential National Player of the Year candidate and Trey Holder. But, you know, he's been playing well. They actually have Mikey Mitchell, who's playing, who I feel like he's been around for 20 years. I remember watching him as a freshman in high school when he used to play with Julius Randle. Yeah, exactly. I remember at the time people were anointing him as one of the top freshmen, but he was just older than everybody and obviously has suffered a decent amount of knee and ACL injuries, but I totally forgot about him. But it's still kind of, you know, with Remy Martin and Cody Justice of how well they're doing, especially given, you know, we talked about Sam Cunliffe earlier. He left. He was a big recruit. And then you just had Carlton Bragg left, who never played for them. But, you know, you have these talented players that have left, and to be doing what they're doing has been pretty impressive. So interested to see how they do on the road against a very well-coached Utah team that is usually very tough to beat at home, you know, no matter what the talent level is there.
For sure. And I wanted to add to your Carlton Bragg leaving. They have a couple other guys who are coming in next year who actually were at Adidas Nations, and the owner and operator of NBADraft.net, Aaron Smith, actually is quite high on both of them. And that's Zylan Cheatham, who went to San Diego State. And it's kind of like in the similar mold, not exactly like Carlton Bragg, but at least they would kind of play like similar positions. And then a player from Cleveland State named Rob Edwards, who I guess had a pretty nice showing at Adidas Nation. So they have those guys coming in next year as well, even if they lose like a guy like Shannon Evans, Cody Justice, and then maybe even Trey Holder to early entry. Another note for the West Virginia and Oklahoma game, Issa Ahmad, who was suspended, I believe, due to academics, is now eligible. So he was a guy who is a solid scorer and another big body for West Virginia to bring in just to try and get the game in their favor.
Well, I think about Ahmad, he's eligible, but they haven't started school. So this is going to be one of the last games he misses. And I think it's January 13th where he's eligible. So, still have one or two more games to go with him. But once they get him back, then, you know, they really add another great scoring wing. So, you know, West Virginia can often be offensively
that
challenged at times. So getting him back will be big.
That is something that I missed. Thanks, Sean.
No problem. But anyways, thanks for coming on. Looking forward to having you down the road to chat some more, either college or high school or hopefully some NBA draft talk. But thanks for coming on to the podcast. It was definitely enjoyable learning about the Les Schwab and talking about some of the future stars as well as a lot of the college players that we're watching right now.
Yeah, and I loved hearing about the City of Palms, so that was awesome, man. And really glad that you got to go. And Happy New Year.
Great.
Once again, my friend.
Yeah, you as well. No problem. So that wraps up the Sean Mo Hoops podcast, the first one of the new year, which will be back to running on its regular weekly schedule. So for all the listeners out there, hopefully you can go to the iTunes and give it a 5-star review or whatever review you want, as well as a write-up. So
Anyway, looking forward to discussing some more basketball down the road.